until the pile hits the sky. Well, even the best years leave a lot to be desired, and then they pass you by.
Oh my goodness, I love that song. Welcome back, guys. Totally unrelated. I'm your host, Adrian Cosby. Do you know that song? Do you know where that song's from? If you do, good for you. If you don't, probably still good for you. It is The Counting Crows. It's called Baby, I'm a Big Star Now. It was the lead-in and lead-out to my favorite movie of all time. And I use the word favorite and all time very loosely. The movie Rounders. It's a poker movie starring Matt Damon and Edward Norton. And who else is in there? A lot of stars in there. A lot of stars in there. Anyway, if you know Rounders, you do or you don't. The first time I saw Rounders was, I saw it in the theater. I was a Matt Damon fan back in the day. Not like, oh my God, I'm a Matt Damon fan. But like, after Good Will Hunting, I was like, oh, okay, let's check out another movie where Matt Damon's really, really good at something. And it was good. It was good. This is how good I thought Rounders was the first time I saw it. I didn't even know how to play poker when I saw Rounders, and I still enjoyed the film. Only saw it once. Flash forward several years, I learned how to play poker. And then I probably see the movie another couple hundred times. You know, flash forward a couple more years. And I start my own poker club. And how did that happen? I have to assume that around 2001 or so, whenever Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker. Does anybody remember what year that was? Let's look it up. In any case, that was the first year ESPN went like wall-to-wall coverage. He's a November 21st, 1975. This motherfucker, my age. Anyway, he won about $2.5 million at the World Series of Poker. I think it was 2001, and I read his book, everything like that. But it was the start of the poker boom. Poker went through what. I don't know if any other sport has gone through such a fast phase of growth, even though it's been around since the beginning of time. But ESPN's coverage of Chris Moneymaker having the name Moneymaker, looking pretty much like your average Joe, sounding like your average Joe, but having the luck to carry him through the biggest field of competitors to that date. And it just made a good story. They did a really good job of making a story out of a tournament. And I was already pretty well into poker, but I had never read a poker book or anything like that. After watching that, I started getting a lot more into poker, reading poker books, super systems, game theory stuff. Here's the thing, guys. I don't read. I was never a reader. I have dyslexia. I read slow. That's the story that I had grown up with my whole life. I was in learning disabled classes from the time I was in first grade till till I graduated high school. And not like classes where all we do is finger paint all day, but you know, I needed individual attention. Aside from the dyslexia, I think an attention deficit issue. Not like some kids, but certainly not like other kids. I fought my whole life to get out of learning disabled classes because I didn't like the stigma of being in there. I liked the kids fine. I just didn't like the way it made me feel being in there. So every 2 years I'd take a test. They'd say, yeah, he doesn't need to be in here. They'd put me in regular classes and I'd just fail miserably because there was not enough individual attention to keep me on task. And I go right back in. It was like the recidivism rate. You know when people go to jail and then they go back to jail and then they go back to jail? There's a word for that, but I'm not able to pronounce this early in the morning. You guys are the first people I'm talking to. In any case, I read a lot of books around poker, and it was the beginning of a shift in my, in the way that I think about myself as being smart or not smart, intelligent or unintelligent. I always thought myself to be unintelligent, and so not only did I think I was unintelligent, I thought everybody else could just tell I wasn't very smart. And that's a huge saddle. That was a huge saddle to carry into my 30s. But it turns out I was pretty good at poker. Even better than playing poker, I was really good at being a poker room manager, which at the time and still today is illegal. But if you know anything about me, I always played by my own set of rules, understanding that other rules exist. And I understand that, and I'll play by those rules when they catch up to me, but I really believed in, you know, the game I was spreading as not being harmful to the people that were playing it. So it was worth the risk to me. Me and my partner George ran a poker club for about 2.5 years, and George wanted to expand. I wanted to keep everything the same because it was illegal, and I had a lot of experience with illegal endeavors, and my understanding of them was always that the same quote that they use at the beginning of Rounders, which is where Matt Damon quotes Amarillo Slim, the greatest proposition bet better of all time, where he says you can shear a sheep many times, but you can skin him only once. And to me, that means you can get it while the getting's good. But take a break. Let the hair grow back. Be forgotten about. Change locations. Change your name. Get a new customer base. George had different ideas. George just wanted to expand and wanted to pay people to run it for us. But I think that was... Well, let's make a long story short. We had a very successful run for about 2.5 years. A month after I sold my share of the business to George, he got the club shut down. It's not like he didn't see it coming, though. He had been infiltrated by an undercover police officer. He knew the moment the officer infiltrated and still continued to operate under the guise that the officer was just there because he liked to play poker, which is what he told George. George confronted him. He said, no, man, I just want to play cards. And 2 weeks later, arrested everybody involved with the club. I was no longer involved with the club, but I was at the club the night that they busted it and left with my friend Zeke, who had a bad feeling. And I said, yeah, I got that feeling too. So we left early and got a call a couple hours later that the club had been busted. Thank goodness I wasn't there because I was on the list to be arrested if I was there. And so was my friend Zeke, who was not there. So we avoided any legal ramifications. And I think for the most part, everybody avoided most legal ramifications. The thing that we didn't anticipate was that when they raided the club, they took everybody's money. They took everything of value before they arrested anybody. They took the TVs off the wall. They took the tables and loaded them up. They took the chips, as if an impromptu game might break out before everybody had gotten done being arrested. And here's where I think they went too far. They searched everybody's cars and took money and drugs and anything that they could say was contraband out of other people's cars. In the end, they kept everything, charged everybody like a $50 fine and court costs. It wasn't that big of a deal. At the end of the day, the judge that heard the case had played at one of the clubs. It was actually a sweep. We had helped a couple other people start their own poker clubs, and so when they went down, they all went down at the same time. And a couple people lost, a guy lost a Cadillac, but it was a late model Cadillac, and I'm pretty sure he had inherited it. But still, to lose your car to a to a poker game that you're spreading to people who want to be playing it just seems stupid to me. But I was watching Rounders last night. It made me think about that story, and so I decided I would start off with that. And poker was the first place. I was sitting at a poker table, and Carla Fiermonte, a friend of mine from North Carolina, said something. I don't know what I said, but she said, "Oh my gosh, Adrian, you're so funny." And her husband, Vince, who was also a friend of mine, was like, "It's not that funny." And I always felt that Vince didn't really get me. I mean, I think we were good friends, but I always think there was some sort of a competition there, because the first website I ever built was like a poker website, and it wasn't really about poker. It was really about seeing if I could build a website. And he was like, he had a problem with me having my face on it. Even though it wasn't really my face, it was an outline of a shadow of a negative of my face. If you knew me, you could tell it was me, maybe. But if you didn't know me very well, there's no way you could tell it was me. And I think he thought that was pretty silly. I think he always thought I was pretty silly, or had lofty dreams, or was a little bit unrealistic. And I totally agree. I did have lofty dreams. I was unrealistic. He was a web designer, and I had just built a website on like GeoCities or something like that. So he had every right to question my web building abilities. But in any case, she thought I was funny. And at that moment, it was the first time I had ever heard anybody tell me I was funny, and I actually believed them. And I shared that with her, because it was a pivotal moment. From that moment on, I decided that anytime I was going to be funny or say something funny, to take a beat and think about it before I actually said it. I didn't understand the terminology of comedy at the time, but what I had committed myself to at that point was that if I was going to be funny, not only was I going to set it up, but I was going to act it out. So if you know anything about comedy vocabulary, and by comedy vocabulary, I mean the structure of a joke. A joke has a premise, a setup, and a punchline, and tags and twists. There's just different parts to setting up the mechanics of a joke. No matter how long or short the joke, you can identify these different moving pieces. The only pieces I could identify on my own were the setup and the act out. And at a poker table, the act out, a lot of times, is all you really need to get people to laugh. And that was a very, very defining moment in my life. I mean, I remember where we were and what we were doing when that happened. And so when I was watching Rounders last night, it was very, very cathartic to think how parallel my life was as a poker player as to how it is as a comedian. Because as a poker player, you can play 7 nights a week. You can play 30 days out of the month. But when you take some time off, you hope that the last game you played was the best game that you played. It's sort of like this. If I played poker last night and lost, and I was mad about the loss, I would carry that with me until my next good poker session, which is the exact same thing as comedy. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm a bad poker player until I prove it otherwise, but you can't really shake that feeling. Same thing with comedy. If your last set was bad and you don't have another set for 5 weeks, you're going to have 5 weeks of not the best feelings about your comedy. Granted, if you take 5 weeks off of comedy, I hope you're in the hospital. I mean, I hope you're not in the hospital, but if you take 5 weeks off of comedy, then it'd be hard to call you a comedian unless you're just, I don't know how you take 5 weeks off of comedy. I've been off the road for 3 weeks because of this move, and I've still found a couple chances to get on stage. The hardest part was the emergency surgery. I haven't been on stage since then, and that's been 2 weeks, and it is killing me. But tomorrow, I'm heading out to the Olympia Resort in Wisconsin. And did I say Wisconsin? Is it Wisconsin? Yes, it's in Wisconsin. For a one-nighter. It was a lot closer when I lived in Chicago, but I booked this out months ago. It's about a 7-hour drive. I'm probably going to do it by myself because I just need the road. Can you hear the road, by the way? I'm in the new condo in Columbus. And there's a lot of road noise, which I love. I love. It's like listening to the ocean. A lot of people would say that this is not an ideal location because it's so close to I-270. But I say, it's the perfect location. I say, but what about the road noise? And I will say, that's exactly why I chose it. The road be calling me. I'm going to share this with you too, guys. This might be disjointed as fuck because I've never woke up. You're the first words out of my mouth. I did take a shower, but I just put the podcasting stuff together and hit record. I'm expecting comedian Jay Snyder and comedian Sean T. Lynch to be gracing me with their presence very shortly. They said we'd be getting started at 7:30 this morning, and here it is at 10:13. And I'm expecting them in about 15 or 20 minutes, which means we should be getting started around noon. Whew! Guys, it's been a crazy week. I've been recovering. I've been overdoing it. I've been over-medicating. I've been under-medicating. Let's put it this way. When you hire comedians to do work, which is what I did, the place needs to be painted. We need to put some floors in. Just some general maintenance, cleaning and stuff, like anything you do when you want to make a place your own. So I hired my two best good friends that do construction and painting, and that's Jay and Sean, and they came in right away and helped me out. And the first night we were very unproductive but had a blast. The second night we were very productive, maybe didn't have quite as much fun. And then we took 2 days off, and we're back at it on Friday morning. Hopefully we'll get all the painting done today, get all the light switches and covers put back on, and valance is hung back over the shades. Get the high spots and be done with the painting, start the flooring next week. But I am not one for pharmaceuticals, guys. I don't know if you know that about me, but I don't know why. But if it doesn't come from the earth, I'm not going to be that thrilled about taking it. Don't like engineered medications. But I can say this, you know, the right blend of different types of medications, alcohol, and herbals, and you can have yourself a pretty good time. I was on very low doses of everything, and I think that's what made it survivable. But there was a couple moments there where I thought, maybe I had gone too far. But isn't it weird? I don't know if you guys do this, but I do this sometimes. Like, I compare my ability to drink or do drugs or anything throughout the history of my life in relation to something I saw in a movie once or somebody I know who's way the fuck out there. You know, like, well, it didn't kill Robert Downey Jr., so I can mix all these different things. But the truth of the matter is you have no idea how drugs are going to react in your body from person to person, you know. People die from doing cocaine their first time. Not often, but it can happen. You know, I don't think anybody's ever died from doing weed, but, you know, you certainly could do edibles and pass out and face first and blast your face open, die from the fall. It'd be hard not to argue that the weed killed you. Not directly. The weed didn't stop your heart, but if it makes you black out hard enough to fall in the face, kill yourself or drown or whatever it is, shit, aspirin could do the same thing. In any case, we had a good old time painting this place. Not thrilled with the colors, but it's better than what it was. And also, it takes some time for the colors to kind of set in on you. I think once we change the floor color, we're going to like it a lot more, too. These guys, though, came in and busted ass for me while they're here. When they're not here, who knows what they're up to. Got cable hooked up, all the utilities. I think I got to get the trash out today. There's tons and tons of trash, and there's going to be even more when we rip the carpets out. It's been a crazy week. I've been lifting, twisting, and bending, which is the things I'm not supposed to do since my surgery, but I've taken the last 2 days very easy, and everything feels like it's still working. And healing, not overly swollen. I go back to the doctor at the end of March to find out if I'll live. I'm pretty sure I will, but if there's any more bulging in that disc, which with the way I'm sitting right now, there might be. I can touch. I'm touching my back right now, and it's like a swollen, you know, it's a little swollen right where the surgery incision is. And I think that's to be expected, but there's a lot less pain. I had a kink in my back whenever I'd look at myself in the mirror naked, which was several times a day. It looked like there was something in my back that would cause my spine to like go slightly to the right and then straighten out again. So it always looked like I was kind of leaning on my right foot. So I started making a habit of trying to rest on my left foot. And that was right around the time when things started to become unbearable. I was getting like a numbness in my right butt cheek and all the way down my leg. Well, that's gone. I can feel all the way down now. But the nerve hasn't started responding as well as I would have liked. So there's still a little bit of floppy foot going on. But I mean, it's tremendously better than what I was dealing with before the surgery. So I have no complaints in that department. I'm hoping that when it's all said and done, I'll be able to run by June. That would be the absolute latest. If I can't run by June, I would say it's probably a safe bet that I'll never run again, at least recreationally, and maybe for my life one time. Be more like one of those run with a foot drag or run with a heavy limp. And I've seen people on the bike path running who look like they shouldn't even be walking. So we'll see. It's up to the doctor. But I'm hoping for running. I would like to run competitively one more time, maybe, and then give it up just like I did with soccer. When I tore my ACL, I rehabbed to come back for soccer for 2 seasons and then gave it up, which was ultimately the goal. But I mean, I'm 40 years old. It's about time that I start coming to grips with who I'm going to be for the rest of my life. And that's something that I think I realized yesterday when I was on Facebook. I found a post where I had just become a USSF referee, which is a United States Soccer Federation referee, which is a license you get in order to referee soccer games. And it was the first level, or the lowest level of referee. I could be a linesman, basically. And I did that a couple times. And I realized after doing it a couple times, that's not anything I ever want to do again. I like refereeing the recreational league games in Yellow Springs, in the town that I'm from. But I know those kids, and it's like, and I know the other referees. It's my community. It's all for fun. It's not that competitive. The parents aren't that loud. And every other competitive level of soccer, the parents are the worst part. The parents are like, it doesn't matter who they voted for. All of the parents at a soccer game are either Trump supporters or Bernie Sanders supporters. There's almost no middle ground. They're either screaming at the top of their lungs for injustice, that there is injustice, and they're only seeing one side of it, or they're quiet and they understand this is a game, and they only get upset when the children get upset. Because I'll tell you this, as a coach of youth soccer for many years, the children rarely get upset. They might get upset with one of the players, they might get upset with the referee, but they do not yell, they do not carry on like the parents do on the sidelines. In fact, the main reason I coach is because I can't stand to be on the other side of the field when I watch my son play. It is nasty. And it's amazing how many of these kids or parents are yelling at the top of their lungs, and they don't even understand the rules of the game. They don't even understand strategy, rules, or the concept that both sides are both being judged. It's almost like some parents think that their team is a superior set of human beings and that the other team should just lay down and cower. It's weird. Maybe I'll do a scientific study about what makes parents insane at sporting events, but I think the social media has some aspect, some fault. People are becoming a little bit more adept at saying what's on their mind instead of being polite. And I remember one time I had a parent yell at me from across the field. He said, "It's your job, coach, to coach your players not to play like that." I said, "It's my job to coach the players. It's your job to shut the fuck up and watch." and the referee thanked me. So I don't want to say that was the right thing to say, but it's what I said, and I'm not proud of it, but it's the truth. You know, you're either a spectator, you're a player, or you're... That's it, really, guys. You're either in the stands watching, or you're on the field playing, or you have no idea what's going on, and you're somewhere else, right? I'm the type of person that likes to be on the field playing no matter what the sport. I love baseball when I'm playing it. If you try to put me in the stands, it better be in a box, because otherwise I am going to lose my mind. Not because mostly because I don't understand the game that well. Not my game. I don't know who the players are. I understand the strategy well enough, but it's just not something I find that interesting. So when people say soccer is boring, well, anything you don't like is boring. Banking is boring, except for to bankers. They find it interesting. Accounting is boring, unless you ask an accountant. The one I love is when people say soccer is not a sport, because for whatever reason. Clearly, soccer is a sport. Bowling is clearly a sport. And I don't necessarily think all things that involve competition are sports. But if your physical fitness enhances your ability to do the sport, then I would say it's a sport, you know, to do the activity. So therefore, poker, a competition, not a sport. On ESPN, it's not a sport. It's a game. Bowling requires enough heavy lifting, I think, to call it a sport. Curling, a sport. Chess, not a sport. That's a game. But, you know, what are we even talking about that for? I can't wait to get back on the road. It's a long drive to Wisconsin. Also, big shout out to my friends at Laugh Fest this week. If you are in Michigan, the Ann Arbor area, I believe, check out Gilda's Laugh Fest. There's going to be the top talents in comedy from all over the country are going to be there. And all the up-and-coming names. I was there last year. It was a great time. In fact, kind of ruined me on festivals because it was so well run and they treated me so well that there's no point in me ever going to a festival again unless I'm invited. Because when you submit and you go to these festivals, it's all on you. You pay your own way. You pay for your own hotel. Me and Chris Allen went to Cape Fear Comedy Festival a couple years ago, and it's kind of a fledgling festival, but it was more of a hang. It was more of like an open mic festival in that only a couple of the venues felt like comedy venues. It was hit or miss on if any of the shows were going to be well attended, and didn't pay anything, couldn't merch. There was no way to make any real money there unless you were a prostitute or a drug dealer, I think. It was also the same week that the town, the college there was having its graduation, which was UNCW. It's in Wilmington, North Carolina, which I used to live in Wilmington, North Carolina. In fact, that's where I had my poker club. So I felt compelled to get into that comedy festival. It was the first comedy festival I ever submitted to. I didn't get in the first time, but I submitted 2 years later, got in, and got in early. And I had a good time. I mean, it's not like I'm blaming anybody for the time that I had there. I mean, I had a few strange occurrences that happened while I was there that made it less than fun, but I don't blame anybody at the festival or the festival coordinator for any of that. It wasn't, it was just kind of random dumb luck that I had a shitty time. But the biggest thing was, is I spent about $1,200 to do about 5 sets that meant nothing. It wasn't like industry was seeing me. It was mostly just hanging out with other comics, which I like to do, but I can do that every time I go to a comedy club, there's other comics there. So it wasn't like it was a unique thing. Like, I had never met other comics before. And of the comics that I met there, only a few do I have lasting relationships with, and most of those are superficial at best. However, that being said, I'm glad I did it. Will I do it again? I'm on invite-only status right now, unless it's something really major and somebody says I should, or I'm going with a group of friends that makes the cost better, whatever. And for me, money's not really the issue. For me, it's time. What ended up pissing me off about that was I ended up getting several requests for work the week that I was there. It wasn't like I was going to get rich off the work. but I'd rather be working than festivaling, I guess is what I'm saying. Now, we're not talking about the Montreal Comedy Festival or Boston Comedy Festival or any of the really long storied festivals. There are plenty of festivals out there worth doing, and there are some people out there who only concentrate on doing festivals, and it seems to work for them. My point is, that's not me. I'm not a fester, but I will fester. I hope I don't become Uncle Fester. What else do we want to talk about before we get into the shout-out portion of this? I'm doing unsolicited shout-outs this week, guys. I want to thank everybody for all of the help that they've given me for, this the emergency surgery. If you're just now tuning in and you didn't know, you can go back one episode and find out that I had emergency back surgery a couple weeks ago. And I'm healing nicely, but mostly thank you to all of the people who have sent me private messages and check on me daily to make sure that I'm keeping my sanity and to make sure that I'm not withering away. It's been, for active people, sitting still can be dangerous. And I'm glad that my friends out there recognize that and they're taking good care of me, checking up on me. I want to say a shout out to a long lost friend, Laura. You know who you are. I hope you get to listen to this from Dayton. But she didn't even know I was doing a podcast, found it last week, and said she enjoyed it very much. And Laura was one of the people I started doing comedy with in my first year. We were thick as thieves. And, she's since not doing comedy, but was probably my best friend for a year straight when I was first starting to do comedy. Very supportive, very helpful, and now she's married and doing her own thing, and I'm okay with that. I think I was upset with her for a while for quitting comedy, but, you know, when you quit comedy with your life intact, that's okay. Besides, you never really quit until you're dead. It's just like poker. You can say you quit playing poker, but until you can't play poker, you're still in the game. Your stats are still being tracked. That's what I love about the parallels between comedy and poker. All right, so let's do some unsolicited shout-outs. This is going to be kind of quick, but and I think I'm have to skip the music because I haven't moved in. I'm doing this all on a shoestring kind of a setup right now. But CrossFit Ninja 179, thank you. You've been there since the beginning. Thank you for all of your support. Butterfly Lady 86, thank you so much. Javon Brown, thank you so much for checking in on me. Elway 1783, one of my biggest favoritist supporters. Thank you so much for all of your help and checking in on me. And who else do we have out there? It's like the same people over and over again. T-Mac 24, thank you. I believe possibly even a healthcare professional checking in on me. Allergic to exercise, thank you for checking in on me. Amber Gill 32, thank you for checking in on me. I am feeling better. And LS Strat 115, your arms intimidate me, and thank you for all of your support. Now, I just found out this week that I am going to be coming to a comedy club near one of you. Which one? That shall remain to be seen. But the club is called The Drop. It's in northern Indiana. I believe it's Forever Sunshine 09, who said that that's the club she visits sometimes. So hopefully you'll come visit me there. When I go, I'll be there July 22nd and 23rd. I don't know who I'll be taking with me, but I get to take an opener with me, and I'll do that. I still have some t-shirts left, guys. I got rid of about half of them through last week's episode. People, last week's episode was hands down the most downloaded episode that I've ever produced. It was the fastest and most downloaded episode within a week, so fast that the stats haven't even finished compiling yet, so I can't really even make heads or tails of it, but thank you. for checking on me. The way this works, and I just got done reading this book called The Power of the Pitch, or How to Pitch Anything. Yeah, How to Pitch Anything. And one of the things it said in the book was that people don't want anything. Okay, let me say this the right way. If people don't pay for it, they don't value it, right? But I don't charge for this podcast. I'll never charge for this podcast. And I still feel like people value it. At least a handful of you value the fact that it's happening. So I don't necessarily think that that's always true. But I did experience that because I made this offer last week, and I had some really strange responses to it. And this is the deal that I've made with my early podcast listeners, because right now, guys, you may not understand how podcasting works, but I'm not even registering on any lists of most downloaded podcasts. That's not really why I do this. I do this for you as much as I do it for me, but I do realize that there's a handful of you that have been on board pretty much since the beginning. You listen. Whether or not you want to advertise for me, that's your business. Whether or not you want to support me past this episode, you may treat this podcast like cigarettes, like this is your last pack, and then you go back and buy another pack anyway. But this is the deal that I made with anybody that's listening to this podcast at this point. If I have the size, which I still have all sizes, all you have to do is send me a personal message on whatever social media outlet that we share in common. And if we don't share any social media outlets in common, you can email me at adrian.cosby@gmail.com with your address and your name, even if it's just your first name or your initials, just so that the post office can get it to you if I fuck something up. But I'm going to send you a shirt for free. All it says is Totally Unrelated Podcast, CosbyComedy.com. It's a black shirt, red lettering, white outline. It's design-wise, my favorite shirt. Color-wise, my favorite shirt. This is a one-run issue. The next version of this shirt will look slightly different, if not completely different. So this is a what I would call a limited edition. I'm going to hang on to about four or five of them for just myself, for a special occasion, maybe for the 500th episode or something like that, as long as I live that long. That deal still stands, guys, and here's what the shirt does, in my opinion. It's a great workout shirt. I got the shirt specifically because when I first started making t-shirts for my comedy act back in 2011, which was way before I needed one, I think it's 2012, I found that I still have some of these shirts, and my wife uses them to work out in, and she gets all sweaty and nasty, and you can see that salty sweat ring in it, and then she throws it in the wash on hot. It's a black shirt, comes out looking brand new. It's crazy. So I went back to that version of the shirt because I know a lot of you guys work out, and I know a lot of you would wear the shirt working out. It's a great workout shirt, and all it says is Totally Unrelated Podcast, Cosby Comedy, in kind of a bubble font. I don't want to show it to you. I want you to say, you know what? I'll take a free shirt. And with this free shirt, what I'm doing is I'm paying for the cost of the shirt. The shirt itself probably only worth about $7, you know, in raw materials and what it costs me. Then on top of that, I add $1 to feedingamerica.org. So each shirt provides 9 meals for hungry families all across the country, even in the town that you're in, unless, of course, you're in England or in another country. But that doesn't preclude you guys. If you're in another country, I'm picking up the postage. I'm picking up the cost. The reason I'm doing that is to say thank you. I don't want it to be a big deal. I got a message from somebody saying, love the podcast. This is not about the shirt, in bold letters. Basically, I love your podcast, but I would never wear your shirt. But you know what? Maybe somebody else will. You can take this shirt and you can give it away as a gift. And what if I do become famous one day for something other than comedy? Or maybe it is comedy. I don't know. Maybe I never become famous. Either way, it's still a free t-shirt for something that you're supporting, whether you like it or not. And that's just listening. And if I could give all of these shirts away to people who were like, hey, love what you're doing. Not, let me rephrase that. Hey, I tolerate what you're doing. I realize you want to do this to get rid of these shirts to people that actually listen to the podcast, because I don't really want to sell this totally unrelated shirt at a comedy show, because nobody at the comedy show at this point has probably ever heard my podcast. What I have found is that people at comedy shows will buy just about anything if you sell it afterwards. Not everybody, but people want to have something that they take with them from the show. I'm trying to give you that same option from the podcast. This will be the only time that I offer a t-shirt for free that's not part of a contest or anything else. This is just simply a way of saying, hey, who out there wants a free t-shirt from the podcast so that I can tell them thank you personally? It's on you guys. It's really, if I don't get rid of any more, to get rid of the 20 or so that I have gotten rid of, it means the world to me. And that's really my whole goal for 2016, is to give away as much of myself for free that I can. And I can give away a lot. I'm extremely blessed in the fact that I'm able to do this awesome job called comedy, and it covers my travel expenses. I'm pretty much what I would call a break-even comic, unless I'm selling t-shirts at shows, in which case then I'm very profitable. But it's a long journey. It's going to be a long journey. I'm giving myself like another 5 years before I get to where I really want to be. And that'll still be way ahead of schedule for the average person. You know, a lot of people don't get going in their comedy career for 20 years. And I get that. I totally get that. Everybody's kind of in a race against themselves. It's like working out. If you have a workout partner and you guys are both kind of out of shape and you start working out together every day at the same time, doing the same routines, dieting the same or whatever, genetically speaking, you are not going to tone up and lose weight at the same rate as somebody who you're not related to directly. And even if you are related, how many people have a sibling that they're closely related to that has a completely different physical makeup than them? There's no rhyme or reason. When comedians compare their success to other comedians, it's just stupid, because it's not how it works. There's so much luck. I can't be in your shoes and you can't be in mine, and we're not supposed to. You know, the only comparison is as a drag racer. You know, in a drag race, they put two cars side by side, but both of those cars are racing one clock, not each other. They're trying to get the best time. Why do they put both the cars side by side? Because they could just run them one at a time. They put them side by side because it makes it more exciting. And that's what comparison does, is it makes things exciting, but it robs you of all your joy. They say comparison is the thief of joy. Some famous dude said that, and Ari Shaffir repeated it, and I'm repeating it because I heard it from Ari Shaffir. Ari Shaffir also said the first draft of everything is shit, and I think that might be Shakespeare. maybe a little bit boiled down Shakespeare, but I agree with that as well. It's going to be rough tomorrow night, guys, performing for the first time in a couple weeks. I'm not that familiar with my act, but I'm going to go through and listen. I'm going to add all the new stuff, because why not? And we'll see how it goes. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm taking a suitcase full of shirts that I haven't sold over the years. Like, sometimes you'll take a full suitcase of shirts to a show and you'll all but sell out, and you'll end up with like 9 mediums. Sold out of every other size, but all you have now is 9 mediums. So I took all those shirts together, put them in one suitcase, and I'm going to figure out a way to hawk this mishmash of goods before I order more shirts, because I just can't run the risk of having a closet full of shirts that I can no longer explain where they came from. So, just a reminder, if you would like a totally unrelated podcast shirt, and when I say it's the favorite shirt that I've ever made on my own, it absolutely is. It looks great. It smells great. I haven't tasted it yet, but I assume it tastes good too. It's great for working out in, mostly, except for the fact that it's black, and if you like to run outside, black may not be the best color. I don't care if you cut it up. I don't care if you're one of those people that wears cut-up shirts when you work out. I mean, it will handle it because it's a durable shirt. But I would like to say, you know, if you are going to do something, if you are working out in it, I would love for you to send me a picture or post it, send it to me so I can post it on my website, or send it to my Facebook or my Instagram, or tag me in your Instagram or on your Facebook or whatever, or tag Totally Unrelated or whatever. That's all. And if you don't want to do any of that, that's also fine. It's not a prerequisite. If you want to tell me, hey, love the podcast, but I hate this part of it, but I do want the shirt, great. If all you want is the shirt, great. There is literally nothing you have to do. I'm picking up the shipping costs. I'm picking up the donation costs. You are helping feed people just by listening to the podcast. Because if it wasn't for the podcast, I wouldn't have made Totally Unrelated t-shirts. And my belief, as far as merchandising goes, because a lot of comedians sell a t-shirt at the end of the show, and they say, this goes to support a great cause, my child support bill. Now, I have a child support bill, but I will never pitch that from stage. But what I have committed to at this point is, I do add that the t-shirts, a portion of the t-shirt I add onto the cost is for the Feeding America part. I'm not going to tell people about that anymore, because I feel like I'm not doing that to sell more t-shirts. I'm doing that because I think it's the right thing to do. So I don't know how I separate those two things, but I feel like it's probably in my best interest to separate those two things, because I don't want it to be... And it's funny, because I've had people come up to me and give me money saying, here, I just wanted to give you a few dollars to make a donation. You know, I like what you're doing, but I'm not going to wear a t-shirt. It's usually older ladies, and I get that. So I feel like it's, you know, doing the right thing, but at the same time, there's something in this that I don't necessarily need a thank you for. I would do it anyway, even if I didn't tell the audience that that's what I was doing. Other comedians will do a pitch like this. They'll say, you know, a portion of all these proceeds go to Wounded Warriors or something like that. You know, if I sell enough t-shirts, then I make a $100 donation to Wounded Warriors tonight or whatever. I believe in pre-giving, you know, pre-seeds, not proceeds. Whether the shirt sells or not, I owe it to my conscience to make the decision to give to whatever charity it is that I'm going to give to. I like Feeding America because I feel like everybody should be able to have a meal in the richest country in the world. But I'd also like to maybe switch charities or add a charity to something more globally. Because one thing I'm learning through this podcast is that I have a global listenership. I have listeners in China, Singapore, Russia, Argentina, places that I've never been, places that I may never go, but I would like you to maybe suggest charities that are global that you support, and put some thought in this together. We'll crowdsource our charity. And what's funny about giving to charities is that, and you can't really blame them for this, but they sell your information. So like, if you go on to a website right now and donate $15 to Feeding America, they're probably going to use your information, whether they don't even think they give you a chance not to. You're going to start getting mailers, mailings in your mailbox about other charities that have nothing to do with Feeding America. But, you know, once you give to one, they think you'll give to all. And then you could also, there's also the aspect of giving directly, but we'll get into that later. But what I'm saying is, supporting me, supporting a charity, saves you about 200 pounds of junk mail a year. Now, I don't necessarily want to call charity, a charity that solicits you through mail, I don't want to call that junk mail per se, but I don't know any of these other charities. I'm not researching every charity that I get. If I researched every soliciting letter from charities that I got, I wouldn't have any time left in the day. And a lot of these charities are pretty good. I get return address labels from Feeding America to remind me to keep giving. That's nice because I use those, but I just moved. So now the hundreds and hundreds of return address labels that I have are useless. I got to make a new donation, my new address. Maybe a year down the road, I'll get some more. But I also heard this. You know this thing at the grocery store, which I cannot stand? Would you like to give a dollar to, St. Jude's Children's Network or something like that? And I have no affiliation with St. Jude's. I don't even know if St. Jude's Children's Network is a real thing. I just said that because it rolled off the tongue. So my apologies if you work for St. Jude's. I'm sure you're a great organization. The problem is really all they're asking you at the register is, would you like to pay a dollar more for the groceries you just bought? No, I wouldn't. It's not a pitch. And I'm not saying I want to be pitched. But what I love is when people say, I always just say no. I used to say yes, but now I just say no because I have my own thing that I do with charity. But I started listening when I lived in Evanston and started shopping at like Whole Foods and places like that. I would hear people say this, no thanks, I give direct. What? Direct? Huh? So what you're saying is, I don't donate to charities, I put money in the hands of panhandlers, which is also equally okay. I think everybody takes all types, right? It wouldn't be panhandlers if nobody gave money to them. And I'm okay with that. I don't have any problem with people panhandling. My only problem that I have with people who panhandle is the person that panhandles, let's call it scam handle, the scam handlers. The people who run up to your car while you're at a red light and say, hey man, I just ran out of gas. I just need a couple bucks. My family's waiting in the van right down there. You can see it if you look. Oh, there's a truck in the way right now. I just need a couple bucks for some gas, man. Can you help me out? As if that's the first time that's ever happened to me. Or like you're going to get me because it's like, oh yes, I get it. Like, it doesn't matter your story. And I wish more people understood that. The story, the pitch, the sign, what the writing is, none of that shit really matters. You're the sign. The person is the sign. It's like when people give me money after a show and say, I liked your act. I don't want any of your merch. I don't need it. I'm not going to wear it. Just want to support you. That's okay. That's probably the most noble way of giving is direct. I've had people after shows when I wasn't even pitching anything give me $10 and just say, I like the act. That's the tipping culture. The people that say, you know what people really appreciate? When you put a 10 spot in their hand. Some people really do appreciate that. I know I appreciate it. I don't even really need the money. It's not like I'm so rich that I don't need the money. It's just what I'm saying is that I'm not in it for the money. If comedy was something that everybody had to do for free, I'd still be in it. I'd have to have a job, but I would still be doing it. So giving direct is something that you have to do because it makes you feel good. And giving to a charity is something that you do because you choose to and it makes you feel good. It's not, it doesn't have to be so altruistic or noble. Well, I give to charities. I mean, let's be honest. Most of us aren't millionaires. The top 0.01% could eradicate poverty in this country and still be wealthy. There's a statistic I heard one time. But I don't necessarily think you can fix I don't think you can give your way out of poverty. Poverty is a state of being in a capitalist society. A certain number of people will win and a certain number of people will lose, and that's the way the system is built. Doesn't make it better or worse than any other systems, but it is a reality. But I give direct when it feels safe. Other than that, I use Feeding America. If you guys have a charity out there that is global, I'm all ears. Would love to hear about them. And maybe we can incorporate that into the show or into my comedy pitch. I'm going to get out of here in a few minutes, guys. I want to see what else is there that we need to talk about this week. I really don't want to get too political at all on this podcast because I used to be kind of a political junkie. I'd say a news junkie. I'd wake up watching the news. I still do most days watching the news, but I'm going on a Facebook hiatus. I realized I was starting to make a comment this morning about how I was going to go on a political hiatus because, I mean, here's the thing. I don't care that people have political views, but I know some of these people personally. And it seems like the people that I know who have the lowest intelligence quotient have the most to say about the political situation and climate that we're in right now. And I don't care who you are voting for, who you want to vote for, who you don't want to vote for. I'm just saying, I don't care. And so therefore, I'm like, instead of blocking everybody that does care, I feel like it's more like my responsibility not to show up. It's like if you're in high school and you don't like to go to school dances, so you petition not to allow any more school dances. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm saying is, like, you know what? If I don't like school dances, all I have to do for that to not affect me is not go. Will I vote? Of course. Of course I'll probably maybe vote. But these people that are like, well, if it comes down to Clinton or Trump, I won't vote. Like, I just want you to know that's exactly what they want you to do. And so you're giving in. Or you write in a candidate. My friend was like, I'm going to vote for, I'm going to write in Ronald McDonald. And that was for the last Romney Obama election. And I thought, you know what? I have better things to do with my time than make a retarded statement. Than wait in line to make a retarded statement. So, but some people, that's very important that they stand in line and make a retarded statement. And for me, not so much. But currently, I'm very impressed with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and their ability to have a cogent debate. And I think the reason that is because it's just the two of them, basically. And that's a problem. But on the Republican side, it's really falling apart quickly. And I don't get it. I'm not going to pretend to get the allure for Trump. I'll never pretend to understand what's going on with this guy. But if he becomes our president, I'm not going to leave the country. I'm going to support our country. I'm going to support... And here's the other thing about it is, I mean, all of the obstructionists, all of the obstruction that Obama faced, it's not like that's going to be any different for President Trump or President Clinton or President Bernie Sanders or President Marco Rubio. Did you get that joke? Because clearly that's not going to happen. But what I'm saying is, once you become president, a little bit more than half the country hates you and doesn't want you to succeed, right? But I want the country to succeed, so therefore I have to want the president to succeed. And even if that turns out to be Trump, I don't think it's going to be the worst thing that's ever happened to this country. It's going to be some sort of progress. And as I've said many times before, progress, when you're in the middle of it, is painful. It's ugly. It's getting sprayed with fire hoses. It's getting burned at the stake. It's all progress. And then after progress, you can look back and you can see, things are better now. But when you're in the middle of progress, it seems like chaos and craziness. And that's how it's been since the beginning of time. So we'll progress together, guys. Real quickly, if you're enjoying this podcast, I feel like I shorted this answer last week. Why did I get into podcasting? I got into podcasting because I enjoy listening to podcasts. So if you're a newcomer to this podcast, I'm just going to give a couple shout-outs to the podcasts that I listen to, my favorite podcasters, for very different reasons. I like all of these podcasts for very different reasons, and I can exhaust these podcasts in one day on, from driving. Like tomorrow I have a 7-hour road trip, so today I'll be downloading tons and tons of podcasts. To start off, what started it all off for me, the very first podcast that I ever listened to was the Monday Morning Podcast, Bill Burr. I listened to that exclusively. People tried to recommend other podcasts to me, and I said, no, I have a podcast that I listen to, which is ridiculous. That's like, there's no need to be faithful. If you have more time to listen and you'd rather listen to somebody talk about a conversation or their life, this type of format, as opposed to the gossip that you hear on the radio or the news, more power to you. Listen to podcasts exclusively. They even have news podcasts. Bill Burr started all off for me. Bill Burr was then a guest on the Joe Rogan podcast. And after that, it was hard to go back to Bill Burr because the Joe Rogan podcast is like 3 hours long usually. And that, for me, was filling all of my podcasting time between Bill Burr and Joe Rogan. 4 hours a week, basically, was all the podcasting I was listening to at the time. But then as I became more of a road comic and realized that was a great way to kill time on the road, I started venturing out. My next podcast that I joined or started following after, after Joe Rogan was the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco, which is available on iTunes and Stitcher, which is my number one favorite podcast. Neither one of these guys is very much like me, other than that they're both comedians, but both infinitely more successful than me. But when I say it's the only podcast that I went back to episode one, I think I came in around 120 or 130. I went back to episode one and didn't start listening to the new ones until I got all the way caught up. And both those guys, it's like an odd couple of weirdness and... not even weirdness. They're both pretty normal guys. They're a little bit older than me, but I would say politically I don't share many things in common with them, but comedically they always make me laugh. Sebastian and Pete are both probably two of my favorite comedians working today, and so I highly suggest you check out the Pete and Sebastian Show. Other than that, I like Greg Fitzsimmons as a comedian and a podcaster, and he's also got a Sirius XM radio show. I don't have Sirius XM, so I don't listen to that show, but Greg Fitzsimmons is a podcast that I'll always listen to, and you have to get on those quickly because he only has one episode available at a time, and I think you have to subscribe. You pay a little bit of money, and you can get the back episodes or whatever, but he's a great interviewer, and he's just a great comedian, has a great outlook on comedy. And he shares himself completely, which is where I think some of you might hear some of that in my podcast. I get that from him, and that there's no secrets with Greg. He tells you everything about his life, and I love that. I realized that last week when I was sharing some things with you guys about my past that I hadn't even shared with my own wife. So we're all doing this together. We're all coming into this together. She listens to the podcast, but she's so far behind that it's like, I know I'm not going to have to deal with this for a couple more weeks. Another podcast I'd like to recommend to you guys is Bert Kreischer's BertCast. It's available on Stitcher, I think also on iTunes, and from his website, I think, which is Bert. And if you don't know who Bert Kreischer is, he's also known as The Machine. He's one of the best storytellers in comedy right now. I got to meet him a couple weeks ago, highlight of meeting a comedic hero. And I say that having sat for hours on end with Dave Chappelle more times than I can count just talking about comedy. But we're from the same town and I kind of know him since before comedy. But Dave's been very, very supportive of my comedy career. You know, in that he's never told me to quit. He's never offered me a gig. He's never helped me per se. But he does ask, what am I working on? Tell me a joke. That's funny. And that's all the support I'm looking for from any comic. But getting to meet Bert Kreischer at the Dayton Funny Bone and hang out with him for a little while was awesome because he's also one of those guys that shares everything about his life. And that's probably a little bit of where... you hear that from me too, as far as sharing everything, no secrets. Let me give you, my gents are here. I'm going to have to cut this short. Thanks for listening, guys. Let's go let these guys in. We'll do this together. We've got company coming at the front door. What's happening, motherfucker? All right, guys, that's it. Totally Unrelated. Friday. Have a good weekend. Hey.